Hello again and welcome. My name is Patrick Michael, and this is a true crime podcast. If this is your first time listening, you should be aware. This is a very gruesome show in a lot of ways, but also we do try to make the best of it and add some humor to lighten the darker parts of humanity. But either way, the first thing I would like to start off by saying is thank you to everybody who has supported the shows that I do, whether it's this one or anything else. You guys are fantastic. And you know, I don't ask for much. Even just listening to the show is phenomenal. Some people like to leave reviews, some people like to become a patron and donate to the show and help me get better equipment and just be able to spend more time making the show for you guys. And you know what? It's all lovely. But there are those few people that go out of their way to leave shitty reviews, and you know what? Big shout out to you guys as well. It's just nice to know that you care. You care enough to go out of your way to leave a review. Even if it's a bad review and doesn't make any sense, I'm just glad that I mean enough to you to review the shows. So keep it up. But without further ado, today we're actually going to be talking about this guy who is very much a killer. Very much a killer, but he's not a serial killer per se. There are such things as crime, spree killers, if you will, if that makes more sense. I was going to say crime spree killers, but that's just why you don't need the crime part. But basically what these guys do is they find themselves in a particular situation that is either going to end one way or the other. They're either going to be arrested or they're going to die. So they go out of their way to try and take as many people with them as they can before the end. And it's very cowardly because they don't give the rest of us an opportunity to tell them how we feel, to show them how we feel. This, such as podcasting, is one of the few ways that we can do that, where we can trash these fuckers, right? I mean, they're vile human beings, and we have to sit here and try and act like, oh, it's all fine. It's all fine. Treat them like... No, fuck them. We don't need to treat them like anything but the trash that they are. And that's what it is. And I'm not gonna act as if it's anything else, okay? But today we have this particular fella who was in law enforcement but really went out of his way to use his law enforcement negatively. People didn't like him. He was, he would arrest people and then continue to injure them after they had stopped resisting arrest. He was just an excessively forceful officer. And that led to some bad things. That leads to him losing his job and ultimately the reason we're here. I mean, we wouldn't be on this podcast. We wouldn't be talking about this if something more tragic than him losing his job didn't happen. Now, let's be honest. Some officers, some people that get into law enforcement in general are power hungry. They want to be respected, and they feel the way to do that is to be violent and aggressive and just a little bit, I don't know how else to say it, but just a little bit crazy. I mean, when we get deeper into this, and you guys are going to hear it, you know, you've heard of an officer like much like this before. He's not the first of his kind. But he could be the first of his kind that's done something this crazy. Because like I said, some of these guys that get into law enforcement, they are simply going into law enforcement to use that power to be even more of an asshole. Because they might not have got enough attention as a child or in school. Or they might have been picked on, or they were the person that picked on people. It's just a very weird... I mean, to work in a police station has to be very much like a high school. It has to be. I don't see it being any other way. It has to be pretty much the same camaraderie that you get in high school, or you don't get. There's always going to be that one guy who's singled out amongst the group, and he's going to be picked on a little bit more than everyone else, and it's very much like a high school. That's why you see these different personalities show themselves within law enforcement where it's like, hey man, what the hell? How'd you get there? How did you get there? Because I've constantly made this connection between, you know, a homicide officer specifically and a killer. because there's still that one thing in both the killer and the detective or whatever it is that makes them okay to a certain degree with death and violence and blood and gore, right? But there is that fork in the road that takes you on a particular path, one way or the other. Now, sometimes there's no fork. And it's that same guy who has those same, you know, intuitions and feelings and whatever about dead people and killing, where they're okay with it, that they take it into their own hands and they become the monster that they ultimately would like to put in jail. It only takes that one left or right step to take the wrong path, depending on which direction you're actually heading, to be a killer or to be an officer. But it has to happen. There has to be science that says, yeah, for sure, to be a homicide detective, to work on the first 48, to see just dismemberment constantly, I mean, to be okay with that, you have to have something in your mind that says, it's not real, or whatever, right? But then the difference between the killer and the officer is, I think the officer sees it, he's more sympathetic to the situation, obviously. He should be. And I think that's a good telltale sign of, you know, somebody who's very, he's a sociopath. But not every officer gets to that level where they are working homicides constantly, always seeing murders. They're not always getting there. Some of them never even make it to that point, and it's good. But when you get to that level, you have to start paying attention to your fellow officers. Like, hey man, Steve, you know, he was cracking jokes at this murder scene. Maybe we should check him out, get a psychoanalysis on him or whatever, something to, because that's weird. That shouldn't happen. I mean, the fact that it's disrespectful in itself already is a little bit much, but at the same time, you're like, okay, well, that's creepy. What's so funny? I mean, how can you make jokes around a dead body? It's absurd. But there are those officers, there are those people in society, even just in regular uniform civilians, that are like that. But that doesn't always mean that they're going to be a killer. Some people can't handle those situations the way everyone else does. They can't be sad, if you will. They can't put themselves in those shoes to have those particular emotions. They would rather crack the jokes to make themselves feel comfortable. It's much like going to a funeral. Anybody who's ever been to a funeral sees all these, there's probably like three different emotions you can have. But not every time that person who isn't crying or isn't mad, every time that they're doing what they're doing, it doesn't always say that they're going to turn into a killer. That's not what it is. And there's no, I don't know, I can't really explain because I'm not, you know, a psychotherapist or whatever. But there definitely has to be something eventually that shows itself that says, okay, this is too weird. This is way too weird. There's no answers for this. Why is he acting this way? And I should pay more attention to him or her, whoever it may be. Because if you don't, you could regret it. And it seems to happen more often than not. How many times have we seen a crazy case where the neighbors are like, oh, he seemed completely normal. Nothing wrong with him at all. Oh, there's plenty of stuff wrong with them. You just weren't that nosy of a neighbor. Sometimes the nosy neighbors are what everybody needs. You need that one person in the neighborhood who's watching somebody, everybody's steps, really. Because they might find that particular one. I mean, how often has that happened, though, where the nosy neighbor solves the case because they were paying attention to what everyone else was doing instead of living their life? Not very often. Not very often. But today is one of these guys where, you know, just the abuse of power should have been a sign to a certain degree. Like, hey man, this guy's taking shit way too far, and we can't have that amongst these other officers because it's a bad influence. It's saying bad things about us. We got to get rid of him, etc., etc. But today's case is about a fellow by the name of Christopher Dorner. And this is a new case to me. I didn't know very much about it because, as we all know, they're doing their best in the media to try not to publicize killers. And at the same time, I don't think he's not gonna make it, okay? Because like I said, most of these situations end one way or the other. Some of these guys just specifically look for the death by police, by cop, like being, being killed by a cop. Some of them go out purposely for that. Or they just kill themselves after they've killed a bunch of people. And that's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. It's just coward. Straight up coward. What are you doing? I mean, you have enough balls to kill some people, but you don't have enough balls to be judged? I mean, come on. What are we doing? What are we doing? There's no way to get back at these guys. And I'll be honest, he looks like the type of guy that probably got made fun of quite a bit. And the main reason I say this is because he went from first to, I don't even know, late into his life. I'll tell you guys shortly, but most of his schooling, he was the only black guy. He was the only black guy in New York, and you could imagine anybody who is different and they're alone, there's no cohorts to, partner up with them and feel what they feel and be in a position that they're in together. There's an isolation. They find themselves hiding away from society and becoming, kind of living their own imagination, if you will. Because a lot of these people don't realize, a lot of these kids, when they're in these situations where they're being made fun of and, they're being made fun of, things aren't going their way, they didn't make the sports team, mom's not happy with them, grades are poor, whatever the situation may be. It's just school, dude. People think that schooling and all of that is so crucial to your life. So crucial. I will say maybe college. College can be crucial because you're an adult at that point. You're creating real bonds with people who are also alone because, they all go to a school kind of on scholarship or with money, so they travel away from home and all this stuff. So that's how you develop as an adult, as a human being. But when you're a kid and you're in high school and you're getting made fun of and it leads to shit like this, you're like, bro, I mean, it was just high school, dude. How have you not grown up yet? How have you not forgot about that shit? How have you not accomplished or done other things since high school that you can be happy about? How are you not prosperous after school? It's just fucking school, man. Most of those people you'll never speak to again. I would say 95% of them you'll never speak to, you'll never see them. And that's even if you live in the same city, dude. Even if you live in the same place that you went to school in, there's a good chance you won't see those people. Because they move away too. They go somewhere else. So to sit back and say, oh, I was made fun of in school and I couldn't hack it, once I became an adult, so I had to kill people, is absurd. Obviously, I don't think anybody's been quoted to say this, but you understand the perspective. It's like, hey man, grow up. Grow up. It's not high school, it's not junior high, it's not elementary. You're a grown-ass man. And I'll tell you how I know. I'll tell you how I know it's less, it's unaffected. Your life isn't affected by school after you get out. Because what is one of the main things that kids like to call other kids? Even if they're a little chubby, even if they are still very athletic but a little overweight, they call you fat. They call you fat. And if that's the only thing they have against you, imagine when school's over. I mean, how often do you see a giant 400-pound man at a buffet just stuffing his face? No one's going up and pointing fingers at him, making fun of him. You know why? He's living his truth. He's living his life. And why should you give a shit? That does not affect you at all. There might be less chicken up there, sure. There might be less mashed potatoes and gravy, sure. But how is his fatness affecting your life specifically? Where you have to be cruel and rude and judgmental of him? Let him do what he wants to do. But they don't think about this when you're in school. They don't realize that it does not affect you after. It's a small blip in your life. A very small blip. And once you understand that, it makes adulthood that much more exciting. Because everybody wants to say this, oh, I wish I could go back to school. I wish I could go back to school and do it all over again. No, you don't. No, you don't. I promise you, you don't. It's an insane statement to even say. The idea of being an adult and going back to school is absurd. It's even more absurd to say, I wish I was a kid again. Because what is that going to do for you? So you can go through the same things again? What makes you different as a kid now? Because you're an adult, you would still be in the kid mentality back then. And I'm getting off track. Alright guys, so like I said, I was getting a bit off track there, and we're talking about Christopher Dorner here. And what we know, just out the gate, is there was a lot of people that seemed to support this guy. They seemed to be happy with what he was doing. And that in itself is very weird, because a lot of people got injured or people died. Officers were shot at or killed. And some of these people were just random civilians that happen to have the same type of vehicle as this Christopher Dorner, and the police officer simply just rammed the vehicle or simply just shot at the vehicle. They would obviously open fire, which is weird. In two separate incidents during the manhunt, police shot at three civilians unrelated to Dorner, mistaking their pickup trucks for the vehicle driven by Dorner. One of the civilians was hit by the police gunfire, another was wounded by shattered glass, and a third individual was injured when police rammed his vehicle and opened fire. None of these police officers received any charges whatsoever. Just how crazy is that, though? Imagine just having the same vehicle as a bad guy. And you get shot at, you get your car rammed, like you're just driving to work or something. You're just coming out of Starbucks, and all of a sudden now you're being shot at. It reminds me of that case that just happened recently where those guys robbed the jewelry store and then they hijacked a UPS truck, which leads to not only the perpetrators of the crime, but the hostage that was in the UPS truck ends up being killed. Over 200 rounds were put in that UPS truck. This is crazy. No discretion at all? I don't understand it. But this all kind of manifest from one simple incident where Christopher Dorner was fired as a police officer. Christopher Jordan Dorner, that's a hard one to say, kind of. He was born September 11th, 1979. What a crazy date to be born, just September 11th. Obviously, many, many years before the tragedy that took place, but I mean, to have to celebrate your birthday on one of the craziest days in history. I can't imagine what that was like. He was a Los Angeles police officer who, beginning in February 3rd, 2013, committed a series of shootings in Orange, Los Angeles. I didn't know that they had a place in Los Angeles just called Orange. Very interesting. And he was also in Riverside County, California. The victims were police and civilians, including police families. Dorner killed four people and wounded three others. The rampage ended February 12, 2013. So this went on for some time, and scary. But let's talk about how it kind of began. There was a manifesto. That's right. That's a crazy word, and every time you hear about a manifesto, it's always from a crazy person. But this manifesto was posted on Facebook, where Christopher Dorner basically says, after he's fired for reporting reportedly excessive force, LAPD admitted publicly he was fired in relation to this. And it pissed him off. But that doesn't give you right to go and start taking lives because you lost your job. It's like, dude, move. Go somewhere else. I mean, there's police departments and law enforcement everywhere throughout the United States, and you're going to sit here and tell me that this is reasonable action to take because you lost your fucking job? That doesn't make sense. And for anybody to agree that this is a good thing, you're fucking out of your mind. Especially with today's climate where police brutality is at its maximum. Back when this was happening, they were okay with it. People were supporting this. Not only the fact that he was definitely fired for brutality, excessive force, he ends up going and trying to take lives of civilians and police officers. There was seriously something wrong with this guy. Well before this stuff happened, well before he got fired. I would say it's a good thing that he did get fired. Imagine what we would be talking about if he managed to work as a police officer for many, many, many years. Chances are he would most certainly be one of these officers that we talk about today who kill somebody because they try to get their license out of their wallet. You get what I'm saying? Like, that's absurd. It's absurd, especially now when we are so... we're all paying way more attention to what our law enforcement is doing and how they're taking control of certain situations. But yet, we still had the incident with the UPS guy, the UPS robbery and what have you. A hostage was killed. They didn't go out of their way to try and make sure that that person survived. It's a weird climate. Christopher Dorner was actually born in New York. Like I said before, he went to a school where he was pretty much the only black kid in the entire school. And he attended the school Cypress High School in Cypress, California, after, moving from New York to Southern California. Dorner graduated from Southern Utah University in 2001. So, I don't know, I would imagine Southern Utah, probably also a very white school. He majored in political science, and he had a minor in psychology. While he was there, he was a football running back from 99 to 2000. So he's a very athletically built guy. A bigger guy, for sure. Dorner later stated that he was the only African-American student in his high school from 1st to 7th grade. And he had altercations due to racism, as we would expect. It's absurd, but of course, kids are ruthless, man. While he was a teenager, he decided to become a police officer and joined a youth program offered by the police department in La Palma. And this kind of makes you wonder, like, we're obviously hearing about how he was picked on due to racism, and then he decides to become a police officer because he's ultimately, like I said in the beginning, trying to regain that power where he can say, you can't talk to me this way, you can't do this to me, you can't treat me this way because I have a badge, right? Because that's really what it is. Police officers are either the guys who really care about their community and want to take care of their people and be protective, and then there's the guys who are like, I was picked on in school, so I'm going to get a badge so nobody can pick on me again. That's it. Those are the two options. I mean, Dorner was actually a United States Navy Reserve officer who was honorably discharged as a lieutenant in 2013. He was commissioned in 2002, commanded a security unit in the Naval Air Station Fallon, Nevada. From June 2004 to February 2006. So once again, getting more discipline. And I would say bulking up that resume to become the police officer that he always wanted to be once people were making fun of him. In 2002, while training at the Naval Air Force, Dorner and classmate found a bag containing nearly $8,000, equivalent to $11,000 in 2018, that belonged to a nearby Korean Church of Grace in Enid, Oklahoma. They handed the money to the police. When asked their motive, Dorner replied that the military stresses integrity. There was a couple of thousand dollars, and if people are willing to give that to a church, it must be pretty important to them. So not a bad guy. I mean, the average person who finds $8,000 in a bag randomly, they're not giving it back. So this flip-floppy type of thing here where it's like, hey, which side are you on? Obviously, it sucks getting fired. But people get fired every day. And this guy, Christopher, obviously had a very good resume where somebody else would have hired him. He didn't have to go out of his way and hurt people because he was hurting. It's crazy that it gets to that point, right? Crazy. Nobody's there to say, hey man, it'll be okay. It will be okay. Christopher Dorner actually had a Navy rifle marksmanship ribbon and a Navy pistol shot ribbon with expert device. So he was very good at what he did. Like I said, bulking up that resume, looking even more like, hey, I want to be a police officer and you can't stop me from doing it. Look at this resume type shit. During his time at the Naval as a Naval Reservist, Dorner joined the Los Angeles Police Department. He entered the police academy in 2005, graduating in 2006. Shortly afterwards, his duties as a probationary officer were interrupted when he was deployed by the Naval Reserve to Bahrain. On his return from duty in July 2007, Dorner was paired with training officer Teresa Evans to complete his probationary training. According to the LA Times, Evans said that on Dorner's first day working with her, he told her that he planned to sue the LAPD after he completed his probationary period in response to how the LAPD had responded to complaints he had previously made against his classmates. So that is really strange. So basically, what I'm getting from this is he was upset with how some of his classmates were acting, I would imagine, and who they were as people, and then he just tried to snitch on them and tell. But it's like, you know, you want the best of the best. That's what I would say. And it reminds me of the Men in Black scene where he's, you know, the best of the best of the best, sir, right? And he pulls the table over for the test, whatever. It's a bunch of these different guys from different levels of, you know, military and law enforcement, and they're trying to get him into the Men in Black. Very much the same idea. You want to have the best guys. You don't want to get guys or girls in your situation, in your unit, that have nefarious intent. You don't want that. How is that going to benefit you as a police force? How is it going to benefit your city when you have an asshole who is using his badge as like a shield of negativity, in a sense where it's like, oh, I can just flash this badge and you have to do everything I say or you go to jail. You go to jail. It's crazy to me. And believe me, I don't have anything against police, you know, police officers or law enforcement itself. It's a necessary need, but at the same time, you have to be able to weed out the crazies. Because much like every industry, every type of job, there's crazies. Especially when it's a job of power. When it's a job that says, I can do no wrong. There's going to be even more crazies. I'm surprised, and we know through the history of serial killers, there has been some of them that have a job much like this, where they have authority. They might be a security guard. They might be a manager of a KFC, something like that, where they have power over people. You have to do what I say. I hold your life in my hands in a lot of ways. On July 28, 2007, Dorner and Evans responded to a DoubleTree Hotel in San Pedro regarding a disturbance being caused by Christopher Gettler, who suffered from schizophrenia with severe dementia. 2 weeks later, Evans gave Dorner his performance review, which stated he needed to improve on three areas. The next day, this is when Dorner files the alleging that Evans had used excessive force in her treatment of Gettler, accusing her of kicking Gettler twice in the chest and once in the face while he was handcuffed and lying on the ground. Now, like I said, this whole investigation goes on, and the review board heard the testimony from people that worked at this hotel. Gettler was also brought to the police station and given medical treatment for his injuries to his face and did not mention being kicked at the time. According to Gettler's father, later that day, Gettler told his father he had been kicked by an officer, and his father testified to that at Dorner's disciplinary hearing. So, this is what we were talking about in the beginning, where he was using excessive force, and this is how it all started. It all started with this, I would imagine, probably manic person being, you know, kind of subdued, but to the extreme. Like, hey man, you don't have to go that far. And when you're a new officer, you should really be second in command, not charging ahead, you know, taking your own initiative. But sometimes it happens. In a videotaped interview with Dorner's attorney, shown at the hearing, Gettler stated he was kicked in the face by a female police officer on the day in the place in question. However, when Gettler testified at the hearing, his response to questioning were described as generally incoherent and non-responsive. The investigation concluded that there was no kicking and later decided that Dorner had lied. So what I'm getting here is simply, I'm sure this probably took place. I just think it took place and it didn't work out in his favor to get away with it. So in 2008, he was fired by the LAPD for making false statements. And I guess, yeah, that's annoying. It's annoying. Whether it's true or not, they fired you for making up shit. Allegedly making up shit, okay? That sucks. But at the same time, grow up, dude. Grow up. Find another fucking job. You did too much here. You obviously had an issue. You obviously had a problem. To take it to this extreme of murdering people? What? Doesn't add up at all, especially when it's like there's plenty of police departments, sir. And even if you weren't going to do that, what's wrong with being a security guard or a truck driver? I don't know, anything else. Quan the Randall Kwan fella stated that Dorner was treated unfairly and was becoming a scapegoat. Dorner appealed his termination by filing a writ of mandamus. I don't even know what that is. Judge David Yaff wrote that he was uncertain whether the training officer kicked the suspect or not, but nevertheless upheld the department's decision to fire Dorner. The enraged Dorner, who screamed in disbelief at the end of the hearing, "I told the truth! How could this fucking happen?" Right? He's upset. And the outburst in itself should have been a sign. Dorner then went on to appeal at the California Court of Appeal for the 2nd Appellate District, which affirmed on October 3rd, 2011, the same ruling. In early February 2013 was the start of a series of revenge shootings. Dorner purported to have posted a detailed note on his Facebook page discussing his history, motivations, and plans. This manifesto was 11,000 words. I didn't know that Facebook allowed you to post that much. I mean, it's a lot. Dorner went on to list 40 different law enforcement personnel whom he was prepared to kill, and stated, "I know most of you who personally know me are in disbelief to hear from media reports that I am suspected of committing such horrendous murders and have taken drastic and shocking actions in the last couple of days." The post began, and it goes on to say, "Unfortunately, this is a necessary evil that I do not enjoy but must partake and complete for substantial change to occur within the LAPD and reclaim my name. The department has not changed since the Rampart and Rodney King days. It's gotten worse." Dorner went on to have one demand, a public admission by the LAPD that his termination was in retaliation for reporting excessive force. He also asked journalists to pursue the truth, pointing out specific lines of investigation for reporters to follow under the Freedom of Information Act, and said that video evidence was sent to multiple news agencies. I don't know if it's because he thought that maybe there was too much of a brotherhood or family type of situation within the LAPD at this point, that he felt it, he deemed it necessary to take it into his own hands. But in the end, this is not the way to go about it. The legal system is set up for stuff like this. You don't want corruption in your law enforcement departments. It's absurd. So you'd think that by taking the necessary, because being a rookie cop, being new to this, of course they're not going to believe you. Why would they? They stick together. It's a brotherhood type of thing. But at the same time, you have to be able to be willing to take the punches as they come towards yourself as well, and do it correctly. All these things can be fixed in a proper way. This incident here, I'm sure, didn't change anything. Let's be honest. Other than people being injured and him being injured. We'll say that for now. On February 9, 2013, in response to Dorner's manifesto, start of a killing spree, LAPD Chief Charlie Beck informed Dorner through the media that there would be a review of the disciplinary case that led to Dorner's dismissal. So they're saying, "We're going to check into it for you. We're going to look into this. We're going to try and make it right." Beck said that officials would re-examine the allegations by Dorner that his new law enforcement career was undone by racist colleagues. It feels like, I mean, this is the 90s. Things, for him to be the first one to really come out with something like this in, you know, 14 years is crazy. Of course, it's going to be harder to believe you. You're a new cop. You're new to the force type of situation. It's just, it seems so crazy. I mean, it is crazy. Let's be honest. His killing spree actually began with a package stating the complaint sent to Anderson Cooper, and we know Anderson Cooper, that white-haired beauty, that stallion. On February 1st, 2013, he received the package. After the first killings, Dorner's threats in his manifesto caused law enforcement to mount a widespread... What's happening? Widespread manhunt that spread from California to Nevada and Mexico. Protection details were set up for over 40 potential targets. So there's all these people that he's put on this list that he's looking to kill. Is there really 40 people that were keeping you from doing your job correctly? I don't think so. That's a lot of people to be against one guy. Like I said, look back at how it was when he was growing up, he was the victim almost always. Then he gets a badge, and now all of a sudden he's the hero. He's looking out for everyone else's best interest when it comes to being a Los Angeles Police Department officer. Yeah, I don't know. February 3rd, during the evening hours in Irvine, California, 28-year-old Monica Kwan and her fiancé, 27-year-old Keith Lawrence, were shot dead in Lawrence's parked white Kia Optima outside of their condominium complex. Kwan, a women's basketball assistant coach, was the daughter of Randall Kwan, former LAPD captain, and the lawyer who represented Dorner during the 2008 dismissal. Lawrence was a campus public safety officer for the University of California, Southern California. That's the exact same job that Dorner could have taken. He could have had a job as a public safety officer very easily, I'm sure. February 4th, Dorner's purported manifesto was posted online, stating his motive for the shootings and was to clear his name. He wrote, and I quote, "I will not be alive to see my name cleared. That's what this is about, my name." Dorner's manifesto had also specifically named Randall Kwan and his family as targets, so Irvine police named him as a prime suspect in the murders of Monica Kwan and Keith Lawrence on the afternoon of February 6th. The manifesto said that Kwan had failed to represent Dorner's interest in favor of those of the LAPD. So he's just a crybaby, it feels like. Just a fucking crybaby. Just a big old baby looking for sympathy because he lost his job. I don't get it. That's why I still say, grow the fuck up. Grow up, man. Did you not already go through enough as a youngster through first, seventh grade, and then went on to a Southern Utah school where you're probably still one of the only African-American people there? It's absurd that you think that this is how we go about fixing things. Has it ever helped? I mean, let's make a quick analogy here. David Koresh and the Branch Davidians had a cult, and the ATF, you know, shut them down from doing anything negative. People died. It was a horrific event. But Timothy McVeigh was there. He wasn't a Branch Davidian, but he was coming back from serving in the military. And he sees this happen in Waco, Texas, and guess what? He becomes the Oklahoma City bomber. So what I'm saying is, Timothy had this idea in his head too, that this is somehow going to make things better, it's going to fix things, it's going to, in a sense, be justice for those Branch Davidians or whatever the fuck his ideas were. But you have to realize, that doesn't fix anything. It makes everything much worse. February 5th, according to military sources, Dorner checked into the naval base in San Diego, but skipped checkout procedures when leaving. So what was he doing? I mean, to show your face after you've already killed people is pretty crazy anyways. February 7th, two LAPD officers were driving in protection detail that they were assigned to as security for one of the potential targets of Dorner when they were flagged down by R.L. McDaniel at about 1 a.m. McDaniel reported seeing a man matching Dorner's description at a gas station. The officers investigated the report, and as they did, they ended up following a pickup truck very similar to his, and when the driver stopped, got out and fired a rifle at them, grazing one of them, actually hitting him in the forehead, sort of. I mean, could you imagine just a shootout and getting shot in the forehead, sort of? And not, I mean, it's just scary. It's scary. About 20 minutes after the shooting, two officers of the neighboring Riverside Police Department were ambushed while stopped in their marked cars at a red traffic light in the city. One officer, Michael Crane, died shortly after the shooting. The other was rushed to a nearby hospital in critical condition for surgery and survived. So it's very much cowardice too. He's sneaking up on people, very much like David Berkowitz. You're going to sneak up on people while they're in their car. I mean, not really expecting anything, and also officers that you didn't name. So basically anybody's number could be up because of this guy. Hours later, the burning remains of Dorner's vehicle, a dark gray 2005 Nissan truck, were found in a remote fire trail by citizen Daniel McGowan near Big Bear Lake. Investigators spread out to search for Dorner in the surrounding area, and about 125 officers went from door to door. All schools in the Bear Valley Unified School District were placed in the state of lockdown. which I hated those during school, those damn lockdown things, but they're so important. But at the same time, they're so important, but yet we still are reporting school shootings. Kids are still able to bring guns in. It doesn't make sense. CNN reported that the LAPD, they were reopening the investigation to Dorner's dismissal on February 9th. February 10th, authorities offered $1 million reward for information leading to the capture of Christopher. For the first time, Dorner's actions were described as a form of domestic terrorism. Dorner believed to be hiding somewhere in San Bernardino Mountains. An unmanned aerial vehicle was deployed to aid in the search for Dorner amid the fears that he would head to Mexico. Later in the day, a Lowe's store in Northridge, Los Angeles was evacuated based on reports of possible sightings of Dorner. Riverside District Attorney filed formal charges against Dorner for the murder of a police officer and attempted murder of three other officers on February 11th. And February 12th, police raided a hotel in Tijuana, Mexico, based on a tip that Dorner was there. They discovered surveillance footage of Dorner purchasing scuba diving gear at a sporting goods store in Torrance. So what was his plan? Like, was he going to swim somewhere? I don't know. What is that? A message that was later posted on Twitter A message posted on February 12th to the Twitter account of the San Bernardino County District Attorney's Office said, "The sheriff has asked all members of the press to stop tweeting immediately. It is hindering officer safety." The message was actually removed within a few hours, and the final standoff ends as the San Bernardino County Sheriff's Department. Like, we don't even need all that. Can we get an acronym or something? The deputies respond to a carjacking of a white Dodge truck at 12:22 p.m., began looking for the vehicle on the ground and from the air. The truck's driver was not harmed. Fish and game officers also got involved when they spotted the vehicle, recognized Dorner as the driver. Officers from numerous agencies chased down Dorner to a cabin near Big Bear Lake. Dorner opened fire on two officers. There's video footage of this as well from the police department, hitting both. Officers were airlifted to Loma Linda University Medical Center after the exchange fire, and Detective Jeremiah Mackay was pronounced dead. The San Bernardino Sheriff's Department confirmed to the media that Dorner was barricaded in a cabin. And, you know, of course, they decided to surround the place. Of course, still taking fire and, you know, shooting off rounds as well to him. There was a three-mile perimeter set up around the cabin where residents were told to remain inside and lock their doors. I'm sorry, but if you look at the rest of the, you know, the other shootings of random people who happen to be in the same vehicle, you think I'm going to stay in my house next door? I'm out of there. I'm leaving. Goodbye. You don't know how many of these stray bullets fly through other people's windows? Could you imagine? They make it out like every bullet just lands somewhere. It has to. And you never find out where it goes. They're just shooting aimlessly. Not aimless, I guess, but, you know, bullets can travel. I don't know. Police initially attempted to force Dorner out of the cabin using tear gas. They demanded over the loudspeaker that he surrender, and of course Dorner did not surrender, so they decided to use a demolition vehicle to knock down most of the walls of the building. Then they shot pyrotechnic tear gas canisters into the cabin, which resulted in the cabin catching fire, because, you know, tear gas, pyrotechnic tear gas, fire, gas, right? It's going to equal flames. That's just what it is. Shortly thereafter, they heard a single gunshot from inside the cabin. As the fire continued, it burned for a very long time. Ammunition was exploding from within the cabin, making it dangerous for officials to put out the fire. So it definitely burned for a long time. The evening of February 12th, Los Angeles police in San Bernardino, that's so hard to say in a row, I'm sorry. They denied reports that a body believed to be Dorner had been recovered from the burnt cabin. In a press conference, they stated that no body had been removed from the site, adding to the reports of a body being identified were untrue, as the cabin area was too hot to make entry. On February 13th, it was reported that the human remains found in the search for Dorner's body was Dorner's body in his cabin. A wallet with his driver's license, definitely said his name, and he was burnt to a crisp. And this is another thing that just bothers me. It's like, it seemed like he really wanted to have the justice system on his side to benefit him, to help him out. But he was too much of a coward afterwards to even be arrested to face the court himself again. Like, he's all fine with him being on his team, but once he does something bad, like, what the fuck? This doesn't add up. On February 15th, the sheriff's office announced that the autopsy showed Dorner died from a single gunshot wound to the head, with the evidence indicating that it was self-inflicted. The sheriff department's captain, Greg Herbert, who led the assault on the cabin, claimed that the canisters were a last resort, saying, and I quote, "This was our only option, and adding to the potential for the fire was considered." So much like, you know, kind of making the connection back to David Koresh and the Branch Davidians, police officers and law enforcement agencies are not scientists, okay? They're doing the best they can to save other people's lives, not just their own, other people's. So when stuff like this happens, you can't really even get mad at them, because one way or the other, he didn't have a bright future. He wasn't going to be a productive member of society, even if he was to just been arrested. So the fact that he pretty much kills himself, he does kill himself, but also gets set on fire, you can't really be mad. I mean, they're not scientists, but at the same time, they should know how to use their equipment. Yes, they shouldn't be willy-nilly throwing gas in there and then also somehow creating fire, throwing things in there that are going to be flammable. Of course, that's ridiculous, and that shouldn't happen, but it does, and you can't fault them when they're bad people. I mean, maybe in the Branch Davidian case, it's a little different, but here, this guy certainly murdered people. They watched him. He was trying to shoot at police officers. He shot a police officer there, a detective, and killed him. See what I'm saying? He was a bad guy, period. But it is a little ridiculous that they couldn't get him on his part. He couldn't go back to court. He refused to basically be arrested. He just wanted to die. I was like, if that was the case, then you didn't have to kill anybody else, man. You just didn't have to. If your plan was to die anyways, you didn't see any other way out of this, is what he said in his manifesto. Well, do that first. Shoot yourself first. Save us the trouble. Save us victims. It doesn't make sense otherwise. It doesn't make sense. Okay? That is that, you guys. And, you know, like I said, this guy had supporters in the beginning, which is fucking crazy to me. It's crazy to me. What are they supporting? The fact that he lost his job because he did wrong or he lied? But then he takes it to this next extreme where he's killing people. How do you support something like that? Because honestly, when I went into making this episode, I was like, man, I don't want to have any backlash from people who were supporters of this dude. But in the end, it's like, fuck them. If you supported this guy, you're out of your fucking mind. What is there to support? What's good about any of this? I mean, maybe his post in the beginning was a little, like, just somebody ranting, and they gave it a like, and they didn't expect this to be the outcome. But in the end, if you read the entire 11,000 words, there's probably speaking, he probably said many a times what was going to take place, and you're still like, you're a true warrior. I think there's fucking Facebook fan pages still out there. Can't corner Dorner. Well, he got cornered and didn't make it. So, wrong. You can most definitely be cornered, sir. You were cornered worse than anyone else, I would say. Worse than anyone else. That's the worst type of being cornered. You didn't fight your way out. You took the coward's way. You took the coward's way. In the same way that you were using excessive force, the same way that you were sneaking up on these victims that you did end up killing, and probably the way that you took your treatment in school, very much like a coward. Stand up for yourself, man. Stand up for yourself. And not this way. People get fired every day. People get fired from bigger jobs than police officer every day. And they don't go shooting up Microsoft. You see what I'm saying? They don't do that. Steve Jobs lost his job at Apple. He didn't freak out. You know what he did? He went and made another company. Simple. Seems simple. I mean, just find another fucking job. To find out in the end that that's really what this was about, it just makes him seem pathetic. Because that's what he was. He was a pathetic coward. That's it. There's no strength in this. There's no glory in this. It's absurd. But that's going to do it, guys. Thank you so much for tuning in. You know we like to dive into this. I like to do every episode a little bit different. And there is a great amount of information about this case specifically. And the several days that went into it. It's very crazy. This was like a two-part thing for me. I recorded the first 15 minutes 2 days ago and finished it today. So hopefully you appreciate the work and the effort. And if you do, you know, subscribe to the show, tell a friend, click play multiple times. I don't even care if you listen to it. Just click play because the plays matter. But until next time, I'm Patrick Michael. Goodbye.